And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Raptors Reasonless Podcast. I'm your host, Blake Murphy. Joining me back after two episodes and several weeks off of the podcast, unhappy with how I teed up the guests in contrast to his own draft utility second round pick, Eric Green. What's up, man?
I'm just glad to be back from my exile. I'm glad you've deigned me worthy to be by your side again. And I'm just hoping we get news about a Jose Berrios trade while this podcast is going on. That would be cool. But yeah, I'm all right.
Please tell me you saw the Shapiro comments of, I think we're in a better position long term than anyone in this division, .. other than the Rays.
I did not see that, but please tell.
It's led to some great Simpsons memes in the group chat of, oh, well, I'd be lying if I said we could ever beat the Rays.
Please have me killed.
Yeah. Gladly. by the way, apologies if there's a little bit of background rumbling here. There's construction going on my floor. So I apologize for that. But I figured you couldn't wait until Monday for your post-draft Raptors Reasonablest podcast. There is some shit to reasonableize, Eric. It is not stuff that we hadn't been trying to warn is maybe not the right word, but
prepare
people for. There is, when the Raptors jumped up to number four on the night of the draft lottery in late June, the assumption from a lot of people was, hey, well, first of all, the reaction was, hey, this is great, which it was. No matter what you do with that pick, it's better to pick four than seven, unless you really, really care about the small rookie skill contract difference between those two spots, which, you know, I don't not care about. unquestionably a good thing. Most people seem to have had narrowed this draft down to a quote-unquote four-player draft at the top, and that being Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, Evan Mobley, Jalen Suggs. The Raptors had kind of signaled, or maybe we just, you know them well enough at this point, that they weren't going to subscribe to that. They're certainly not going to subscribe to consensus boards. Scotty Barnes is a guy I know they've liked since, I mean, I'm sure it goes back earlier than the college season, but they were in on him, you know, when we thought this was a five-player draft that included Jonathan Kuminga in that top tier. I think they thought it was a six-player draft and included Scotty Barnes in there. So then as things narrowed, you know, Barnes was kind of in the same tier, it seems now, as Suggs, rather than heading up the second tier after that top four. Our Shams Trania reported up until, basically, until the Cavs made the pick, that there were ongoing discussions between the Raptors and Cavs about the number three selection. Michael Grange of Sportsnet had reported if the Raptors were going to move up, it would be to target Jalen Suggs, which obviously is not the case since they passed on Suggs at four. I do think it's pretty obvious why they would have wanted number three, and it's Evan Mobley, who, again, in my book, is closer to number one than than he is to number three in terms of ranking the prospects in this draft. Although Jalen Green gets a bullet on the draft stock for that Casey Musgraves outfit.
Oh, baby. Yeah, I should have gone number one on that alone.
Also a good friend of Scotty Barnes.
Ah.
So we love a pair of sweet boys who are just all smiles and rooting for the people around them.
I'm sure Nick Nurse would be delighted if it turned out that Jalen Green was Scotty Barnes' Canadian friend. One of his best friends is Canadian, Scotty Barnes just said. And maybe it's Jalen Green.
Yeah. You don't know her. She goes to she goes to school in Canada. No, the thing that they did for Nick Nurse is I reported this right before we came on, is that Georgia Tech senior Moses Wright will be with the Raptors in Summer League. He plays the stand-up bass. So that's the addition as Nick Nurse fills out his Arkells of Jace traveling band here.
Yeah. Well, if with a stand-up bass, do the Arkells use one? First of all,
it's just Arkells.
Yeah, sorry.
Second, they use just about everything when they're doing a live stage show at a place like the amphitheater or something like that. Or Budweiser stage, I believe.
Because my mind went to the Bare Naked Ladies with the stand-up bass, which, you know, we're going in a very different CanCon direction.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, it's that song, or one of the Bare Naked Ladies songs, is a little outdated. We need it to be updated if I had a first-round cap hold of $7.28 million. To talk about Scotty Barnes here. Terrible segues aside. By the way, Arkell's doing three nights at Budweiser Stage later this summer. Check him out. Maybe Nick Nurse will be there again. Who knows? So the Raptors, look, we're rambling a little bit here to kind of build up the tension of something you already know that happened. And they picked Scotty Barnes over Jalen Suggs. Scotty Barnes is Raptory enough that when we thought the Raptors might have the number 7 or 8 pick, Eric, you wrote a column focused around Scotty Barnes, but more broadly about taking the best guy and not worrying necessarily about fit. Barnes is a guy who, again, I tried to cover off well, even though the Raptors had, like, look, all I can say is I didn't know that they were going to pick Barnes, but we had like 1,800 words on Barnes ready to go. There was a real possibility that this was going to happen. My big question for you is, we both prepared ourselves enough for Barnes as a player and Barnes in the hypothetical where the Raptors trade down or didn't move up in the lottery. How do your feelings on Barnes and that column you wrote back in June shift when it's the number 4 pick we're talking about instead of the number 7 pick? Because there is an extra element of value play, of opportunity cost. It's a little, you know, Bobby Webster framed a lot of the, and Nick Nurse framed a lot of the fun Scotty Barnes stuff and potential around OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam similarities, but those players were picked at 23 and 27. It's a little different at number 4 to execute the same strategy. So do you feel differently at 4 than you did when Barnes was a hypothetical mid-lotto guy?
Philosophically, no. If they think he's going to be the best player in 3 or 4 years and there's an overlap with two of your core pieces, it's fine, especially when it's this overlap, right? Like, there are certain overlaps I would get concerned about. Like, if you have two centers who can't stretch the floor and can't space at all, that becomes a worry. At some point, you can have too many small guards, although the Raptors have certainly tested that over the years. But I think if you're going to overlap, this is the best position to do it. You would have liked to see them be able to trade down and get an extra asset in this, but I go back to what Bobby Webster said before the draft, and I sort of asked him about this, and he said, hopefully you value something a little differently than another team and you're able to get an extra asset without like taking yourself out of the tier that you'd like to be selecting in. So let's go back to what we know, or what we think we know, at least about the draft. Raptors wanted to trade up to get the 3rd pick. Presumably that is for Evan Mobley, or why would they be trying to trade up? Because they were fairly sure that Mobley would go to Cleveland, as he did. So that's the end of, no matter how they had those 3, Cunningham, Green, and Mobley ordered, that's the end of a tier there, it would suggest to me. And so what do we know about the next tier? Not much, as it turns out, but we know that Scotty Barnes is certainly in it because they had the 4th pick and that's who they took with it. And maybe Jalen Suggs was also in it, and they were just in a position where they said, we like Barnes more than Suggs, which obviously is the case because they drafted him. So how far can you really trade down if it's just a two-man tier, which I'm not reporting, but this is my operating philosophy.
No, I think the logical read on this is that Orlando wasn't, you know, Orlando knows the Raptors front office well.
Exactly. You can't, this is, as I wrote in my column, this is Jeff Weltman sitting on the other side is one of the last people you're going to be able to bluff in this position, right?
Yeah. And so I think the takeaway here, or at least the implication, is that Orlando wasn't willing to pay. Orlando called their bluff on taking Barnes ahead of Suggs, and they felt if they traded down further than that, first of all, OKC probably, I don't know that OKC necessarily needed to trade, felt the need to trade up to four since Giddy was their guy at six, and that's a super fun fit. But, you know, the further you trade down, the less likely it is you get your guy, right? So, yeah. You know, even if we're talking in sub-tiers where, hey, maybe they were impartial between Barnes and Suggs, but that next tier of Giddy and Kuminga, they were like, ah, oh, we're a little less comfortable with that. Well, then Orlando's really the only team you could play
well with. Yeah, exactly. And you trade down to six, and whoever, and if Oklahoma City's jumping up to four, then maybe Orlando's taking Barnes at fifth. I think that was a lot of, not that mock drafts or consensus ended up meaning much after the top three picks.
Hey, that lottery night mock draft that everyone got very mad at me for, though.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Nailed the thought experiment. Yeah.
I was gonna say, let's not mention why you did that.
Yeah, but look, like part of why I did that, and I explained this on the podcast after because people were kind of mad at me, is I was curious what the draft would look like and how it would shake out if the Raptors felt differently than the consensus, and because that's something that they have in the in the past. And now my intention with that was like, The biggest thing that revealed to me is that in conversations with Josh Robbins, our Orlando Magic reporter, I thought that there was an opportunity to trade down. And even if it was only picking up an extra early second, Orlando had the 33 pick, which, you know, when you look at some of the guys who ended up being there still, like Herbert Jones and Deuce McBride and JT Thor and Nemi Keita, you know, that would have been, in retrospect, a pretty valuable chip. Even if the optics, you know, people wouldn't have been thrilled about them trading out of it or whatever. Anyway,
or this just is why, or
this
just
is
saving
why you cover,
the cap
this is why you
space,
cover
right?
a lot of bases.
Yeah.
Especially with a front office like this.
Yeah. So my take is if they think he's going to be the best player in 3 or 4 years or whatever, it's the right choice. I was pretty enamored, like a lot of fans, with the idea of Jalen Suggs as a Raptor. I told you on draft night that's the direction I was hoping they would go. But I would never claim that I think, like, that I know more than them about the draft. They've done, you know, infinitely more research about it than I have. So let's see where this goes. I understand why fans are upset. I'm a bit hesitant to do the, you know, OG and Pascal were drafted in the 20s thing, just because, like, we don't know what Barnes' ceiling is. Like, it's just because they're similar type players doesn't mean the goal is to turn them. First of all, if Scottie Barnes makes a second team All NBA, like at one point in his career, that'd be good. but beyond that, like, they're not exactly the same guy, even though they're being talked in the same terms. It's like Malachi Flynn isn't exactly Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry. Like, you know, these are comparisons, you know, are the thief of joy. And they're also, they're just used more as stylistic comps than predictors, right?
Yeah, so, they're crutches more than anything.
Yeah, so let's not pretend just because those names are being thrown around, they're viewing those results as some sort of ceiling or expectation.
No, and he's like, he is kind of like, he's pulling, even if you wanted to do that, you'd be pulling from each of them a little bit, right? Like the length profile and body profile is closer to OG. The more natural playmaking feel and ability to push off turnovers or defensive rebounds, you know, is closer to the Siakam side. I don't think he's quite as agile perimeter chasing wise as OG. But again, this is like, you also don't need him to be an all defensive caliber guy right out of the gate. Like, this is the thing too, is like, yeah, OG and Pascal are these amazing developmental successes, which gives you, it lends confidence about Barnes rounding out all the parts of his games, like, end quote, shooting like Fred VanVleet fourth quarter playoffs, as he said in the open gym moment. You know, I forget where I was going with that, but like, those are also, OG and Pascal are also like very unfair development curves to place on Barnes or anyone, because yeah, they are like Pascal Siakam is a 100th percentile outcome of what Pascal Siakam was at the draft.
Yeah.
And OG, depending on how you feel about the injury stuff at the time of the draft, is probably something like 85th percentile outcome so far.
And so I guess the hope based on that is that the Raptors aren't getting high on their own supply of player development juice, right? Like, it's good to have faith in it, and it's good to try to be elite at it, and I think they are legitimately good at it. But
are you looking for a petard to hoist here, Eric?
Yeah, perpetually, my man. But
your favorite phrase.
Yes, I love hoisting petards or seeing people hoisted by their own petards. But you can't bank consistently on 100th percent or 90th percent outcomes. Now, if you think the guy's a super diligent worker, which by all accounts he is, and if you have a good faith in his floor, which seems pretty freaking good to me, as just like a cultural fit and a versatile defender, you have confidence, and then your system and the way you work makes it seem more likely that he's going to be 70 and above rather than 30 or below, you know? And that's how you operate. That's the best you can do.
Yeah, and you know, look, there's also an element here of, and this is really difficult because we get access to the guy they draft. We don't get access to the personality and the open gym moments of everyone they don't draft. It was really quickly clear and obvious talking to Scotty Barnes for like 4 seconds why the Raptors may have been like, look, culturally and in terms of if we're going to bet on a guy to put in the work and reach that high percentile outcome, this is the guy, because this is an infectious dude. And I know that, you know, I apologize if any listeners, you know, don't want to really hear the personality side of stuff because they're you know, more worried about the fact that right this second Jalen Suggs is a better basketball player. But this is part of the Raptors' process. They believe in culture and they believe in people. And my God, is Scotty Barnes a likable guy. 3 press conferences in like 14 hours in.
And a trip to the gym.
He wasn't with him in the gym. Was Jalen Suggs in the gym at 8:30 this morning? I don't know.
I'm pitching OG Scotty Barnes sitcom where it's just Scotty Barnes talking 100% of the time, and and OG's just giving Jim Halpert looks to the camera, but never actually says anything.
You know what the vibe they're gonna have is I was gonna use a more recent wrestling reference that people won't get here and say the Acclaimed from a tag team from AEW, but I think it's like, it's a little bit of like the New Age Outlaws in D-Generation X era, where they come to the ring and Road Dogg talks for like 4 minutes on this scripted rambly intro, and then Billy Gunn just says, suck it, to end it. And now I think there'll be a little more, OG and Scotty will be a little more PG than that. But yeah, I could see, you know, Scotty Barnes, they're on open gym or they're doing one of those, you know how Raptor Social likes to send like a weekend message over Twitter, Instagram, or whatever. Scotty Barnes talks for like 45 seconds, and then at the end, OG's just like, we the North.
OG gives a 2-second weather report. It'll be sunny.
Yeah. So, all right. So, Scotty Barnes, I don't even know how much we need to break down his game at this point. Like, we talked about him a little bit with Sam Vecenie, a little bit with Ben Pfeiffer. We talked about him a little bit, like, going back to when we first started Draft Prep. And obviously on the written side of The Athletic, which, by the way, you can still get 50% off by clicking on any of our articles or going to theathletic.com/we the six, which I forgot to tell you off the top of the episode. So go do that now. We've written lots about Scotty Barnes, the player. Short term, I think we're both on the same page with, even with a high draft pick and a decent core in place, you're trying to get whoever's going to be the best player long term, or long term within like a 4 to 9 year window, which is your reasonable range of control on a guy. And whether or not Scotty Barnes becomes that, we'll see. Short term, what Scotty Barnes brings to the table is very good and very versatile defense. Some pretty good and infectious on-court leadership from the look of it. Really solid passing for a 6'8 guy who played some pseudo point guard off the bench for Florida State this year. Barnes was asked today what position he actually sees himself as if he had to pick. And he actually said a point guard, which is, you know, he's not necessarily going to be that. But he did average more than 4 assists a game, primarily coming off the bench in college. So there's a real encouraging passing feel there, especially in transition. He's probably one of the best transition players in the draft. So if you're looking ahead to, you know, hey, what's the Raptors' identity going to be next year? Well, they forced a ton of turnovers again last season, but the transition game struggled a little bit, and I think Barnes can help with that.
Although, Sam Vecenie, I will say Jalen Suggs would have helped with that as well.
Absolutely, he would have. But we're no longer doing Barnes versus Suggs. We're just evaluating Barnes and his fit now.
Yeah.
So tools wise, you have a 6'8 guy with a nearly 7'3 wingspan, enormous hands, the standing reach and wingspan of a center, plus athleticism, great score on the shuttle drill. Sam Vecenie ranked him as one of the most versatile defenders in the draft. You can certainly see he's going to need to add some strength, and he doesn't have what you'd call like elite vertical burst around the rim. Like, he's not a natural straight up rim protector, which is still something that the Raptors are going to lack a little bit as currently constructed. But you could, you know, maybe Barnes comes off the bench, but you can very easily see how an Anunoby Siakam Barnes trio would be able to play the 3-4-5, similar to how Anunoby Siakam and Rondé did at some points, or Anunoby Siakam and Stanley Johnson or Boucher or whoever. There is enough functional size between those three, I think, that you could play quote-unquote small without really losing overall positional size. And then, of course, the handful of guys who are going to take you into the post and beat you up, well, maybe Ken Birch is back for that. So offensively, there are more questions. Barnes does not have a track record of shooting. Shot 11 of 40 on threes last year. Wasn't a particularly great free throw shooter. Didn't have great touch in the floater range. Very limited sample for pull-ups. Again, this is something guys can get in the lab and work on. Nick Nurse said he doesn't think there's a ton wrong with the shot, just a few tweaks. However, in the half court, first of all, Barnes's passing probably at the NBA level isn't going to be quite as impressive as his transition passing against stationary sets. And there's going to be some spacing issue with just about any combination of Raptors guys right now. They're going to fill out a few roster spots elsewhere, obviously, and Gary Trent can add some shooting, and Malachi Flynn in the second unit, and all that good stuff. But Eric, there are some concerns here in the short term about how this all fits when it comes to doing a pretty important thing, scoring the basketball in the half court.
Yeah, and it's really important in the playoffs, more so than it... I mean, it's important at all times, obviously, but even more so in the playoffs, I think we can safely say. And that's why my main takeaway is this, you know, as the Raptors tried to, for so long, balance the future and the present, they're, as is the case with many draft picks, but I think especially this one, this is a, you know, a finger on the scale of the future. And because this raises some questions about what you do in the near term, and it ties up another valuable, not only roster spot, but, you know, I hate doing this, high-level asset in a player who isn't going to immediately address that particular need, which is probably their greatest, like when just talking about the different phases of the game, it's probably their greatest need. And that's for several years standing now, is the half-court offense. So whereas before you think that you're getting, and I'm sorry to keep on referring to Suggs, but Suggs, like, obvious, not that he's a dynamo in the half-court. In fact, his passing in the half-court was one of his, you know, things that he'll need to show that he can improve at. But he answered more questions there, and the Raptors would go into free agency probably looking at a big man to use either with their cap space or the mid-level if Kyle Lowry's back. Now you're sort of looking at two spots you need to fill in terms of those high-end rotation pieces, and you don't necessarily have the means to do that, and we'll talk more about that as it goes along. But that is, to me, that's the immediate price of taking Barnes, as you are complicating the near term, especially when it comes to the half court. I don't know how it's going to fit. I asked Nick Nurse what he thinks he can see, he'll see offensively right away from Barnes, and what he mentioned was mostly stuff in the transition. He did say his passing will play all over, so that's, you know, that's something, and I suspect it will. But there are limits to that in the NBA when you only have so much shooting and, you know, creation off the dribble on the floor. And even if you're bringing back Gary Trent, which I assume they will, it's not like he's a high-level creator either. He's, you know, basically pure spacing. So I have questions. He doesn't answer that in the short term, and I am curious about how they attack free agency and trade season while making this pick, or because of this pick.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Yeah, and, you know, you're never relying on second-round picks to contribute. You know, those are even more of long-term shots. But even if you were, the Raptors kind of just doubled down in the second round. We're going to talk about some of those guys. With the 46th pick, the Raptors checked off a franchise first and drafted a Canadian for the first time, Delano Banton out of Nebraska. He's a sophomore, 6'9" guard. Really, really fun playmaking. Can run some, you know, he was basically a lead guard at Nebraska. If you're profiling him ahead, you know, maybe he's probably got the ball in his hands a lot because, again, he's a non-shooter. But also some second side pick and roll. At his length, you'd hope he'd eventually get strong enough to do some off-ball stuff, maybe even some screening just to leverage the size and playmaking. But right now, he's only 194 pounds, according to how he weighed in at the G League Combine. So 6'9", 6'10", wingspan, and only 194 pounds. Him and Chris Boucher are going to look like a pair. Banton, elite standing reach. Again, another wing/guard with really good size. Very, very fast. Another dynamic open court playmaker. Had some really, really fun plays with Nebraska. And defensively, uses the length well at the point of attack. Not sure there's going to be the type of positional versatility you expect with a 6'9 guard, just because of the frame and the strength there. But he is a pretty good, or was rather, a pretty good college defender. And it's cool. As Bobby Webster said, shout out to Rexdale. For the first time, the Raptors have drafted a Canadian, Eric.
Yeah, he took my my column about the Raptors not doing enough to reorient themselves in Toronto and Canada after the delay personally, and shouted out Rexdale. So I'll credit myself for that line, even though that's probably wrong. I think it was William Liu who retweeted it. Or tweeted the element that he wore, what was it, 45 or 46?
Yeah, because for the bus route.
Yeah, for the bus route, which is, you know, the first TTC tie-in since Matt Bonner that I can think of. Yeah, I mean, it's cool. There have been so many Raptors or Canadians that have played for the Raptors now and across the NBA that it doesn't have the same... sort of, it doesn't hit the same, but it's neat, and it's just another thing to check off, and, you know, getting him into the developmental system, I'm sure he'll be in Mississauga plenty, if the 905 is in Mississauga, that's a different question, that will be a neat experience, and, yeah, the Raptors have made the 46th pick work before for them, so, cool.
They sure have, and Banton was, in terms of, you know, value here, he was ranked across the 15 boards we surveyed anywhere from 51 to unranked. He was 77th on our composite board, but I had bumped him up into 62 on our Raptor board. There is, to share some process, despite that one guy in the comments who hates hearing about my process, when I'm doing my Raptorized ranking, I do have like a sanity check where... if it's too far out of range of what everyone else is doing, just because, like, the draft boards I'm pulling for, like, I can't go too far off of what Sam Vecenie thinks when he spends all this time doing it. Anyway, I will go off of it. I had Jaden Springer at, like, super high. I do not understand Jaden Springer lasting that long. I'm very upset about it. He goes 28th to Philly, of course.
Yeah.
He was ranked 7th on my board. But no, Banton was at 62, which is, you know, completely in range for a draft that had maybe 75 guys getting mocked somewhere. And Banton's a guy that I liked a lot. I did a profile on him. At one point, I was going to join PD Webb's marathon stream breakdown, and Banton was the guy that I had picked to break down because he has some really cool tape. You know, he's just going to need some time. He's, the other thing that makes him Raptors-y too, beyond all the skill side stuff, he's a 21-year-old sophomore who had a redshirt transfer year and had a ton of, had a huge jump in development as, once he got that transfer year under him. So, not dissimilar to, the path of a DeLon Wright or, you know, a Norman Powell who didn't transfer but was basically a low-usage bench piece until his third year. Malachi Flynn had a transfer before his senior year. So they clearly used that as, I think, a way to measure developmental capacity. And, you know, Banton, through that lens, checks that. One pick later. Must have killed them trying to decide.
I loved your question. I think I was laughing on the Zoom call with Bobby Webster.
What? How they decided who went 46 and who went 47? Bobby didn't really answer. He kind of said give the Canadian kid, but then he like walked it back. So
no, it sounds like they. I mean, the way he made it sound is they knew they wanted Banton, and maybe there was a more heated discussion to have. But what can you do in two like?
Yeah.
At that point in my mind, it's just a list that you're going down, but maybe that's not how they were operating in that case.
I mean, look, Sharif Cooper was, he went one pick later.
Yeah.
And there has been some rumbling that, like, you know, he was trying to pick his spot, not dissimilar to like a Fred VanVleet or Terrence Davis situation. So maybe it was that. Maybe it was trying to feel out what kind of contract they could get done with Cooper if they went that way. They did not take Cooper. They took David Johnson out of Louisville, another sophomore, 20 years old, 6'4.75", 203 pounds. So more than 4 inches shorter than Banton, and he's got 9 pounds on him. Similarly long with a 6'10.5" wingspan, elite sprint speed, and one of the better natural passers that you could find in the second round. However, there are some question marks with David Johnson. Probably the biggest one for me is that he runs, we just talked about how Banton and a lot of other Raptors prospects, O'Shea Brissett's another one who during the draft process, he just kept learning so much and getting better as he went that, you know, it kind of makes you think, oh, this guy knows how to take the coaching and make himself better. David Johnson didn't really improve as a sophomore. He still had sky high turnover rate. He was one of the least productive statistically, so by counting stats or rate stats, one of the least productive guards to get drafted in the last decade. He only had one statistic that was higher than 50th percentile among all guards drafted since 2011. Everything else was below average. And, you know, some of what you're projecting with him is, it's a good thing he has length because I don't think he's a natural point guard. He doesn't have a great ability to create an advantage yet. What he does have, though, is an ability to take advantage of the advantages that others create and make the next pass. He's a good second, like a good second side passer or a, you know, scramble defense passer. He does have some good quickness to him. And he has obviously that length. And then the big question, or not question, but the big encouraging side is that he shot almost 39% on threes last year. And it's not a huge sample. And the pull-ups are still questionable. But his catch-and-shoot mechanics are good. And he hit a good percentage on a small number of catch-and-shoot to where I would bet the Raptors see this guy as someone who can at least spot up in the corner, knock down a three, and attack an aggressive closeout, you know, kind of in the way they ask their fifth options to. I think he's going to go to the G League, and they're going to see if they can turn him into a bit of a combo guard rather than just a two guard. You know, another guy who's super annoying defending at the point of attack and can help create a lot of turnovers. So, again, I know you don't have a huge take on David Johnson, but another guy that spiritually they're staying on a certain track here.
Yeah.
Lengthy defenders who can create a lot of turnovers and get easy offense in transition. And then, hey, in the half court, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, not quite the same body, but like the guy you're describing sort of reminds me of Malcolm Miller a little bit in terms of what the role that he might fill at some point or the role that they hope maybe he would be able to fill at some point. Yeah, I mean, not a ton to say here. I second round picks can go in so many directions. But it was encouraging to see that shooting jump in the second season. And if that, I know you spoke about his lack of an improvement in some ways, but, you know, that suggests there's something there. And, you know, it's not like he just completely rested on his laurels. So, yeah, you don't expect second round picks to come in and compete. And obviously the Raptors think there's more capacity for growth than those numbers suggest, and we don't know what his situation was like exactly in college. So yeah, I'll wait and see, but I don't have any strong takes here. Not going to provide them. Not going to make them.
No, that's okay. I was mostly curious what you thought of as, you know, a holistic strategy. To round that out, the Raptors have signed Justin Champagne and Moses Wright.
Champagne Poppy? Is that what we're calling?
Yes, that joke was made a lot.
Oh, all right.
So Moses Wright is just a summer league guy at this point. Senior power forward out of Georgia Tech. 6'9", 7'1", wingspan.
Chris Bosh.
Yeah, 226 pounds. So at least they got some...
Not Chris Bosh.
Some thickness there. Pretty good interior defender. Interesting guy. Another guy that I wrote a draft profile on. So we were... we were ready to go there. And then Champagne is a guy that Sam Vecenie, when he was on this podcast last week, really liked for the Raptors as a potential second-round pick. Sophomore power forward out of Pittsburgh, 6'7", with a 6'9.5" wingspan, 206 pounds. An analytics favorite, Kevin Pelton over at ESPN, was much higher on him than the average. We had him at 50 on our Raptor board. So, of the four kind of second round slash undrafted guys, he's the highest. So yeah, there's you know, those two guys fit it too. You know, long forwards with some right maybe a little less so. Right's maybe more of a traditional power forward, where Champagne's more of a kind of a Raptors forward. Just shocking though with all this that Yves Pont didn't land with the Raptors, because he is the hyper Raptors version of a Raptors guy. Instead, he's Memphis bound to keep that Memphis league pass value floated high.
Yeah, you got the Grizz while getting rid of JV and no longer quite being Canada's team in the same way. I mean, obviously they still have Dylan Brooks and Brandon Clark. Yeah, you got to keep watching for now. Yes, before they, who knows what they'll do. Yeah, the Grizz remain interesting.
Yeah. Look, man, Josh Giddey's going to be one of the most fun league pass guys, too. He's a treat. Yeah. I was really high on Giddey. I had him...
Oklahoma City drafted him, didn't they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, what am I talking about? Oh, we were talking about the Grizzlies. We wanted Memphis to go up and get Giddey. My bad.
Yeah.
Yes, sorry.
They traded up to 10 for Giddey.
Yes, but OKC's even more fun with Giddey and Poku and Shea and Dort.
Yes, they maybe are closer to Canada's team with JV. No, JV plays in New Orleans.
we're having a rough morning, man.
Look, I'm not even going to defend myself on there. Let's go. Come on.
Okay, so that's where the Raptors are at post-draft. The number 4 pick, which everyone's obviously very fired up about, positive or negative. 4 second round / undrafted guys. We've seen this before. We know the Raptors will cast a wider net, and functionally, there's no real difference between 46, 47 and these undrafted guys. So we can kind of look at this as these guys are all coming in. They're going to compete with your Freddie Gillespie, your Paul's Watson, your Utah's Watanabe for the back end roster spots the rest of the way. I'd assume Moses Wright, if he doesn't, you know, fall flat in summer league, is probably exhibit 10 bound, as those early summer league guys for undrafted tend to go. So, you know, that creates a pretty fun core for summer league, which is right around the corner.
Oh baby.
And you and I will be there. So Freddie Gillespie and Malachi Flynn will be there. Matt Morgan and Trey Tinkle from Raptors 905.
Very Tinkle.
And then I would assume all 5 guys that the Raptors either drafted or signed undrafted. And certainly Barnes would probably be the one question mark in terms of, is his deal signed? Do they want him in playing that quickly? The fact that he was in the gym at 8:30 this morning makes me feel like he is going to demand to play in summer league, if that's a thing that anyone does. So
who's
going to
coach the team? That's what I'm wondering about. Mutombo?
I would assume it's a Mutombo Goodwillie split.
Yeah.
Mutombo, who at last word is still planned to be the Raptors 905 head coach, John Goodwillie, who's got some reps in the summer league spot in the past. So I could see kind of a, like the year jam on Stackhouse, I think, split it.
Just to give the players on that team emotional whiplash.
Yeah. Yeah. The Mr. Break You Down to Build You Up versus Mr. Build You Up to Build You Up to Build You Up.
Yeah. The stick and the carrot.
Yeah. All right. So that's where summer league's at. We have a quick pivot here.
Yeah.
Free agency begins, what is today? The 30th? I have no idea what day. Monday. At 6 p.m., teams will be able to start negotiating with free agents, sign minimum guys, sign your rookies, all that good stuff. August 6th at noon is when technically most of these deals can happen. You might even see things like the Westbrook trade from draft night held off, you know, to expand into a larger deal with multiple sign-in trades. You're probably going to hear some Lowry stuff and some other stuff, you know, between the 2nd and the 6th that won't be official yet. Lots to come. We'll probably talk to you again before then, but let's just tee it up with let's just end this off, Eric, with a Lowry vibe check. Bobby Webster asked about it last night, said, you know, they're exploring three paths, and there are three paths that you and I have talked about and
you've written, have written explicitly about. Yes.
Yeah. So there's the option to re-sign Kyle Lowry, which I've thought, even if they took Jalen Suggs, made sense because Kyle Lowry is very good and he's a very good leader and mentor. And I very much enjoy watching Kyle Lowry play basketball. I had the hiccups and my voice cracking all at once. This is a great minute for me.
I think they were probably related there.
Yeah, there is the path where Kyle Lowry just leaves and he goes to a team with cap space, such as the New York Knicks. And there is a path where Kyle Lowry tells the Raptors he's out and they facilitate something, either because it's necessary to get him to his preferred landing spot and Kyle Lowry has enough organizational equity that you try to help him out and make that happen, but more so because you can get something out of it. And, you know, we can think back to the Chris Bosh to Miami deal where, oh, Chris Bosh for two firsts. No, it's two firsts for playing ball on helping Chris Bosh go to the place he was going to go anyway. So if you're trying to reset your kind of expectations, what happened when we did a mock draft was I was the Raptors.
A mock negotiation.
Yes, mock negotiation. I was the Raptors. John Hollinger was the Heat. We offered the same deal. Eric Kareen, as Kyle Lowry's agent, took the Heat deal. And then at that point, I was like, well, okay, you know, we'll play ball and make something happen. And what worked out there is Kyle Lowry went from a 2-year deal with $50 million guaranteed to a 3-year deal with $55 million guaranteed, and a big partial in the third year. And for my trouble, I was able to pull KZ Okpala, two future seconds, and a pretty sizable trade exception, which, no, the transaction wire of KZ Okpala, 2 seconds, and a trade exception is for Kyle Lowry is not going to look good, but that's not what the trade is. It's KZ Okpala, 2 seconds, and a big trade exception for playing ball on getting him to a place he was going to go anyway. That would mostly apply for New Orleans, Miami, and Dallas, I would think. Whereas Philly, you have more leverage because they have to sign and trade for him. And the Knicks probably just sign him. They don't need to clear space. And then, you know, the LA teams aren't even worth talking about because Lowry would have to take such a significant discount.
No, the Lakers are going to do it somehow. They've decided.
Yeah, sure. And and Westbrook and Buddy Hield and
everyone. Yeah, just get them all there. There's no cap rules. It's fine.
So, Eric, where are you at on the Lowry thing? How are you feeling?
So, before the draft, I thought it was more than likely that he was gone. After the draft, I still feel that way, although I think it tiptoed maybe back toward a more realistic path toward him staying, but I'd still bet against it. As for how it's going to happen if he leaves, like, it sort of depends where Kyle wants to go and what his priorities are, right? Like, if he just wants, and it's going to be a mix of priorities. If he just wants money, then there probably won't be a lot that the Raptors can do. Like, maybe they do figure out a path similar to the one that we figured out in the mock negotiation. I think it's unlikely that there's a scenario in which a really meaningful foundation piece is coming back in a Lowry sign and trade, unless it's New Orleans and like Lonzo Ball or something like that, which again, I don't think is entirely likely, but it's something I've thought about. I would say it's sort of like 65-35 that he's leaving. That's sort of where I'm at. And after that, it's like 75-80% that it's either no sign and trade or a kind of low meaning sign and trade. And then the rest is like, yeah, maybe you're getting a meaningful piece back.
Cool.
How do you feel? Does that sound way off to you?
No, that sounds reasonable.
that's what Jays we do here.
I was distracted by the Jays being in on Trevor Story.
Oh.
Which, wow. Would,
Isn't he? Would hate... Is he a free agent after the year? I think so.
I would have to look that up. I'm sorry. He's not in my Raptor spreadsheet here.
That'd be a weird
one. Be a shame if part of that deal, saw Toronto lose something to that Colorado market. I don't know. Well, there'd be cross sport trade.
Oh.
Kind of thing.
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's okay. It's okay. Real heads only.
Yeah.
So, okay. I'm going to throw really quick hitters at you. Gary Trent Jr. over under 17.5 per year.
Ooh. I'm going to say slightly under.
Okay. Ken Birch is back with the Raptors, true or false?
True.
Which two of Utah, Bembry, Gillespie, Paul Watson, and the fifth non-guaranteed guy that I'm forgetting?
Boucher?
Yeah, I don't really count him, though. Oh, yeah, there's only four.
Rodney Hood?
Yeah, and Baines. I'm assuming Hood and Baines are gone unless they need him for a trade, and Boucher's probably back. But Bembry, Watanabe, Watson, Gillespie, rank them in likelihood of they're on the roster next year. Come on, you know who number one is.
Utah's number one. I'd say Gillespie's probably number two. And then I'd go Bembry, Watson, although I have a tough time separating them.
Yeah, cool. And your favorite target that seems somewhat realistic in some of the scenarios we've gone through for the Raptors on the free agent market, either as a mid-level exception or if they carve out a bit of cap space?
Are we counting Jared Allen as realistic?
I mean, they can get to the cap space. I think Cleveland will match, but if you like Jared Allen for this answer, go with Jared Allen.
Yeah, I'll say Jared Allen, followed very closely by both Lonzo Ball and Rashawn Holmes.
There it is.
Yeah. But I would personally, I think Allen's the better player than Rashawn Holmes and the better, I guess, long-term play, but I get that it will be more complicated and maybe more expensive. Anyway.
All right. Well, I think that's, this is mostly a post-draft podcast, not a free agency preview podcast. We'll be back to talk to you at some point during that free agent frenzy week. I'd imagine we'll wait and time that around whenever there's Kyle Lowry news, because what are you going to do? Listen to a free agent Raptors podcast on August 3rd while Kyle Lowry's situation is still up in the air? No, you're going to wait for the...
And as soon as we started recording, it would happen.
Yeah. So probably post-Lowry news, or at least post-Lowry rumor, we'll be back to talk to you. And of course, on the written side, we'll have you covered with lots of free agency stuff, teeing up what's ahead, refreshing some of the cap and scenario work we've already done, seeing how, you know, these new pieces fit in and around the existing core and potential additions. That's to come. Again, free agency, those conversations can begin at 6 p.m. on Monday, and then on August 6th at noon, they can become official. Summer League starts August 8th. We'll have some coverage on that as well. So theathletic.com/we the six, or click on any of our articles. You can get 50% off an annual subscription right now if you're not already a subscriber. And hey, if you are,
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed all the draft preview stuff. Hope you were well prepared, since the five guys that the Raptors landed are all guys we had profiles for, which is
that's a W. You know,
two years in a row.
That's a win.
No Brunos, no DeJuan Hernandezes. DeJuan's Hernandez. Yeah. All right. I think that's it. Scotty Barnes is a likable guy. Don't anchor him to Jalen Suggs for too long, because that was not Scotty Barnes' decision. That was the front office's decision. I think everyone's going to like this kid, even if, I would probably bet Suggs is going to have a better rookie season. But, you know, I do think
is he your rookie Barnes of the year? Is favorite. He your rookie of the year pick, or is it Cade Cunningham?
I don't know, man. I might Jalen Green. Jalen Green's going to average 20 in that Looter and a Riot situation as Houston rebuilds.
They had a good, they had a fun draft.
Yeah, although there's these questions about if Usman Garuba is going to be able to come over or not because of his sizable buyout with Real.
That doesn't mean it still wasn't a fun draft.
Yeah, Alperen Şengün, all sorts of stuff. All right, guys. We will talk to you sometime next week. Hope you enjoyed the draft and all the content. Lots of free agency stuff to look forward to. And either a very celebratory Kyle Lowry's back or a very somber Kyle Lowry goodbye next podcast. We'll talk to you then. Be safe out there. And Eric, thanks, buddy.
Thank you, Blake. See ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.